Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of Larsen's Political Economy. This is Sven Larsen broadcasting or blogcasting from the Wide Wild West in the beautiful United States of America. This episode is the third full length of my blog talk radio show. And I have to say this is getting pretty interesting. It's kind of fun, actually, to do these shows because this is a new format. This is a format that provides another opportunity than to write a blog, to talk about an issue and to do it in concentrate. And judging from the statistics over our listeners, there is growing interest in this type of radio show. We're talking here not about the current mainstream white noise in social media and the news cycle. That is not what we're talking about here. We try to rise above that. We talk about other things, more important issues, stuff that matters to people for the longer term. If you want something more than just another tweet, if you want something more than just a Facebook update, this is the place to be. Every Thursday evening, we have a half hour where we talk about the issues that go beyond what others talk about. And today, I wanted to follow up on something we talked about last week, namely, who benefits from the welfare state? Who benefits from big government? And that issue really morphs into the question, what does it mean to build a big government? What are the consequences over time of that? What happens when we transfer power from ourselves and from our lives over to government and ask, when we ask government to take care of us? Well, one of the things that happens is that for every need, for every aspect of our lives that we give to governments, we reduce ourselves to less and less of adults, less and less of independent individuals, less and less of people who can take care of ourselves, who can provide for ourselves, who can be adult responsible citizens. This is a long-term process, something that happens over a long period of time. It's not something you see happening from one day to the other. It's not something you can capture in a Snapchat. But if we take a step back and look at how society changes over time, this is exactly what we see and what happens. We become new individuals. Back in the 1980s, sociologists developed a term called the Soviet man. It was used in, especially in the literature on political philosophy. There was a wonderful journal once called Social Philosophy and Policy that discussed this term to some extent. Very interesting. The term Soviet man was invented to describe what happens to people when they live under unlimited government, if we put it that way, for a long period of time. The Soviet Empire was around for about 70 years, and it destroyed at least three whole generations from families. Atrocious stories that people could tell about life under the Soviet Empire and under socialism. A socialist system that stretched from Central Europe to the Pacific Ocean, and how people changed their character, their attitudes, the very moral fabric of society changed. Because what happens when government grows is that gradually not only does it replace you as the provider in your life, but it also replaces your moral values with its moral values. That is something we're going to talk about later in another episode. What I wanted to talk about today is one of the more tangible consequences of expanding government and what instruments government actually builds in order to be able to impose itself on us and get into our lives. And very often government does the uses as a door opener into its expansion, some issue that we all care about, some issue that is a form of crisis, if you will, that we all want to attend to and fix and take care of. In the 1930s, when the Swedish welfare state was built, the people who created it were it was a Swedish economist and his wife was a sociologist. They wrote a book called The Demographic Crisis. They used the decline in birth rates at that time as their lead into creating big government. They said, oh my God, population is shrinking, the workforce is shrinking, people aren't having enough kids. Oh my God, what can we do about this? And what they suggested was we build an unlimited egalitarian welfare state that will take care of every single need in people's lives and leave the private sphere as a residual to what government provides. This was in the 1930s. In my book that came out last winter called The Rise of Big Government, published by Routledge, Taylor & Francis is the parent company, but Routledge is the label. In that book, The Rise of Big Government, How Egalitarianism Conquered America, I explain to an English audience what this Swedish welfare state, what the ideas were that formed it. And when you have an idea that government is going to provide for every aspect of your life, eventually that you actually unwittingly endorse a totalitarian government. And that was effectively what they created. The language that these two Swedes used was not at all far from what the National Socialists in Germany said about people and why they motivated their big government. Because Nazism is about unlimited government just as well as socialism is. Make no mistake about that. So the Swedish welfare state was based on a totalitarian perception of the role of government in people's lives, a perception of the individual as a residual, a subject of government, and the private sphere as a residual to the government's sphere in your life. When we do this, when we allow this to happen, over time, we also accept the fact that government can essentially do anything it wants, take care any problem, and expand itself based on that. Of course, building a welfare state has really nothing to do with the demographic situation in a country. Having government provide health care doesn't have any impact on birth rates. I know there are social scientists out there who will just off the bat claim that I'm wrong, but they really have no evidence to prove that. They can assert to have evidence, but there, if you look at the evidence, if you look at the literature, there is no evidence that the welfare state increases birth rates. In fact, if you look at European welfare states, their birth rates are lower than here in the United States. Countries in the what we call the developing part of the world, the poorer countries or countries that don't have a welfare state of the Scandinavian kind, have higher birth rates. So there is no connection whatsoever between a demographic problem with low birth rates and the creation of a welfare state. In fact, it seems to go the other way if we look at where the world is today. So what the Swedish socialists did was that they took a problem that they could not solve with a welfare state, but used it as an excuse to create that very welfare state. Now, what does this have to do with our lives here today and here in America? Well, there is a movement Another movement, much more contemporary, that tries to do the very same thing, that the welfare statists, the egalitarians, did back in the 20s, early to mid 20th century. When they wanted to build a welfare state, they talked about the demographic crisis and how we were going to solve that with a welfare state, with bigger government. Well, in our time, the excuse for bigger government is climate change. And that is being used by, for example, the United Nations. There is a report out there that the UN published not too long ago called Global Sustainable Development Report. The Global Sustainable Development Report for 2019 has a section in it called Governance of Economic Transition. Now, this is a UN publication. You can find it online. Governance of Economic Transition. It is written by a group of Finnish academics. And it is supposed to explain how we can change the economy so that we won't have any negative climate impact anymore. If we set aside for a moment the premise of climate change, I mean, I could argue that I could easily, there is plenty of evidence to show that there is no climate change. Even NASA has admitted that the purported evidence of climate change is non-existent. But even let us for a moment set that aside and just look at what the UN is doing with this issue. What we find then is that they are using this as a segue into creating a totalitarian economy. That is what the UN is doing. This report, Governance of Economic Transition, is their segue, their gateway, their stepping stone into a totalitarian economy, into a totalitarian society. So what they do, these Finnish economists, what they actually say is quite startling. They conclude that a central economic planning is the only way to save the planet from some sort of cataclysm, climate cataclysm that's going to come down the pike if we don't create central economic planning. And they reach this conclusion by throwing out existing economic theory, which of course proves that central economic planning is bad because it reduces prosperity, it leaves us all in poverty. And of course, they throw out decades upon decades of experience from such places as the Soviet Empire, not only them, but many other places in the world. They throw that out and say that that was developed during an era, I'm quoting now, during an era of energetic and material abundance, unquote. What they say is that, to quote again, policy-related economic modeling relies on the presupposition of continued energetic and material growth, unquote. Now, what this means is that the United Nations is telling us that once there was an abundance of resources, now we don't have an abundance of resources. So all of a sudden, government has to plan the economy. We have to do away with the free market and with capitalism. And all of a sudden, we're supposed to believe that this is going to work. Well, first of all, even if this was true, that there was a change from abundance to scarcity, even if this was true, government planning would not be the way to deal with it. There is no socio-economic system ever invented by man that is better at dealing with scarce resources than free market capitalism. There is no socio-economic system ever invented by man that is better at dealing with scarce resources and scarcity of resources, to be precise, than free market capitalism. It is the only way that we as humans have learned to successfully harness the resources, the scarce resources we have, and put them to work to everybody's benefits. Just ask yourself, would you prefer to be poor in South Korea or North Korea? And you will have the difference. But I'm going to challenge the very premise of this UN report that we've gone from abundance to scarcity. It is the exact opposite. It is the exact opposite. There is no such thing as scarcity. Do not let a statist sell you the idea of central economic planning based on some notion that we're running up against the boundaries of resource abundance. That is not true. That is not the case at all. Let me give you a couple of examples of why that is not the case. Back in the 1970s, when I became politically aware, when I started following news, when I started reading newspapers and watching news on TV and reading longer articles in magazines, there was a story going around, and we were even taught this in school, that, oh my God, oil is going to run out in 25 years. We're all going to die. The oil crisis in the late 1970s was blamed on that to begin with. Of course, that was not the case. There was just an artificial political crisis that created it. But we were told that oil was going to run out, and we were all going to die, and all our cars were, no cars were going to be able to run, and we'll all rust to death, I guess. Of course, that was not true. Since then, we have discovered that oil, the life of known oil reserves, is well over a century today. Today. And this is 40 years, 40 years after the first big oil scare was imposed upon the world. 40 years later, we still have a century or more to go with just the known oil reserves. Let me give you another example. The United States economy from the 1970s to 2000, from 1970 to 2000, reduced by half the amount of energy it uses for every $1,000 of GDP. For every $1,000 of GDP, in 2000, we used half as much energy as we did in 1970. Now, why did that happen? Did that happen because we had central economic planning? No. I'll tell you why it happened. It happened because free market capitalism found ways to do more with less. Because when you do more with less, you increase the profit margin, you can pay people more, you get more money to invest in even better technology in the future, people become wealthier, and since we have a government that takes in taxes, tax revenue increases thanks to the fact that free market capitalism is at work. And when free market capitalism is allowed to work and to provide for all of us, where we are all given the opportunity of working in a free market capitalist economy, we all live better as a result. Again, ask yourself, would you be poor, rather be poor in North Korea or in South Korea? And so the example of the US economy and how it changed its energy use is just one case of how free market capitalism has shown that out of scarcity comes abundance. When you allow free market capitalism to work, to operate, to stretch its capabilities, when we're all allowed to thrive under free market capitalism, we all do more with less. We all provide something better. We all improve upon what has been done in the past, because we have a profit motive to do so. Some people will say, well, it's crass, it's cynical to have a profit motive. Well, ask yourself, would you work more if I cut your wage by half? Would you do that? Who among you in the audience and who among your friends and family would work more for less? If anybody's wage was cut in half, would they work more? Of course they wouldn't. Only a fool would do that. Only a fool would say, thank you very much for cutting my wage in half. I'm going to put in even more hours now for even less money. So the profit motive is not just about businesses raking in more money to give to shareholders. That is the cynical way of looking at profits. Profits is a way for businesses to build resources that they can provide for the future with. They can pay their employees more. They can pay their shareholders. They can pay more taxes if you want that. And they can build resources that they can use to invest in even better technology in the future to sustain their business, to make sure that they're going to be around 20 years from now. Look at what capitalism can do in terms of creating wealth. Look at what Amazon has done. It is only 14 years. It has only been 14 years since Amazon was created. It is now it was now the second company to pass $1 trillion in market cap after Apple. In 14 years, Jeff Bezos has taken Amazon from a stack of books in a garage to a company worth $1 trillion. Now, do you think that would have happened in the Soviet Union? Of course not. No government in the world has ever created the kind of wealth that Jeff Bezos has, or before him, Sam Walton, Walmart. Look at what Walmart has done for the world. Walmart is the largest private employer in the world. They have 3 million people on payroll. And look at what they do. They provide affordable, basically everything for people. So that people can live on limited means, on low incomes, and still have a decent standard of living. That is what Walmart has done. And there are people who yell and scream bloody murder over Walmart. Well, I, for one, like to shop there. Because I get more for less. Again, that's what capitalism does for you. And you can choose. Do you want to spend more money and get less somewhere else? Or do you want to spend less on basics and then go spend more on something else? Well, you can make that choice in a capitalist economy, regardless of your budget. I've lived on very limited means. I know exactly what it's like. And God bless Walmart. They have saved me many times when I didn't have a lot of money. And this is what capitalism does, free market capitalism does. It builds wealth. And there are people out there who are, like in the United Nations, the report I was talking about, Governance of Economic Transition, a section in the Global Sustainable Development Report that the UN put out for 2019, they just published it. Yet there are people, like the economists in this report and the other bureaucrats at the United Nations, who want to take away free market capitalism and replace it with a planned economy. The UN report about how to create a planned economy even makes the absolutely ridiculous suggestion that there is no limit to how much government can spend, because all they have to do is borrow. And when government borrows, there is no problem, because they will give you an IOU. They will give you a treasury bond. Well, and since that is somebody's wealth somewhere, there is not going to be any problem. We've tried that too. You can't finance a planned economy by simply issuing more debt. There are a few countries in recent history have tried this. I don't think the UN, the Finnish economists who wrote this report for the UN have ever heard of Greece, but I'm not going to break that secret to them. I guess they can sit in their oblivion up there in Finland and their ignorance, while the rest of us look at Greece, we look at Portugal, we look at Spain, we look at Puerto Rico, and we go further back and look at the debt crises in Denmark and Sweden back in the late 80s, early 90s. We can go back to Latin America and look at the endemic debt crises they've been through, and they still are. We will look at the debt crisis in Germany in the 1920s. But we don't even have to do that. All we have to do is look at Venezuela. What happens when government is going to try to plan the economy? Well, right now Venezuela has 1,000,000% inflation. That is a tiny little problem that the central planners over at the United Nations have not addressed. But it's important to be aware of how the idea of a government-planned economy keeps working its way back into our lives, into our time. This UN report is a sneaky way of trying to have government planning piggyback on a supposedly very serious issue, climate change. And of course, government planning is not going to do anything about the environment. If you want to see a really, if you wanted to see a really dirty, destroyed environment, the place to go was Eastern Europe during the Soviet era. The place to go was the Soviet Union. You want to see waste of resources? Go to Venezuela. There are resources laying idle there because government has planned the economy so well that everybody's starving. Well, that was all for this episode. 1 half hour flies very fast. We're going to have another episode next Thursday. Join us then, and we're going to continue this conversation about socialism and making its way back into our lives. Thank you so much for listening to Larson's Political Economy on the radio. See you back next Thursday.